300 years ago, Sir Thomas More invented the word utopia, where everything was going to be hunky-dory. But now we know it's going to be a green-powered Earth, and that'll be solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful, truly superb Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns and the Rivertown Kids. The Solartopia song. We're back for another week in the first new show of the new Mayan calendar. Congratulations, everybody. We survived the end of the world as we knew it, and now we're in a whole new millennium, a new mindset, a new paradigm, a brave new world opening before us here in the year 2013. Mazel tov, everybody. Glad to be with you still. And here we are with to do a major show, really, on ending the world as we knew it with nuclear power. I was going to do today's show on marijuana with Don Wertschafter. He's going to join us, actually. I mentioned it on a previous show. He's going to join us on January 28th, one of the great pioneers of the hemp and legal marijuana industry, Don Wertschafter, a great lawyer and a great activist. He'll be with us on January 28th. But today we have a number of really superb, extremely important people with us. I am in Southern California. Yesterday I attended the Orange County, the meeting of the Orange County Greens in the scenic city of Irvine, south of Los Angeles, where I attended a delightful, powerful, and important speech by Russell Hoffman, otherwise known as Ace, a great animator and one of the leading experts, one of the most important experts on the realities of the San Onofre nuclear plant, Units 1, 2, and 3. Unit 1 thankfully shut now for many years, and Units 2 and 3 shut for almost a full year now. Russell, you're with us? Russell Hoffman, you there?
Hello?
Hello. Russell?
Yes.
Oh, good, good. You're with us. And we also have Gene Coyle with us. Gene is a tremendous expert on renewable efficiency and the whole situation with the rate base in California. Gene Coyle, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, these are two of the great minds here in the campaign, in the new post-Mayan calendar campaign to save the world and to end the world as we knew it and begin a solartopian reality. Let's put a little context on this before I get you going. Russell, I want to talk to you first about the technical realities of what's happening at San Onofre. And Gene, we can talk with you then about some of the financials and what's really going on with the money surrounding the San Onofre situation, the four reactors in California, and, of course, old reactors all over the country. We're also joined by Barbara George. Barbara, are you with us?
Yes,
Barbara's
hi.
On hold. Yes, so you are. Okay, yeah, we have a great, great, great team here today. Barbara, you'll talk about some of the rate issues as well, if that's okay. Let me put this in context. Today I put out a piece called Showdown at San Onofre. I'm sure it's posted at the PRN site. If not, it will be. It's also at commondreams.org, counterpunch.org, and alternate.org, as well as freepress.org, and my own, the website I edit, nukefree.org. So it's getting around the Internet here. Showdown at San Onofre. And what I talk about in this article and the reality that we're talking about today is the fact that we have 104 nuclear power plants in the United States. They are rust bucket jalopies, radioactive, falling apart at the seams. We have the reactor in Crystal River, Florida, where the company went into a so-called fix the containment dome. They wound up poking at least three more holes in it. We've got a reactor in Nebraska, Fort Calhoun, that was flooded, for God's sakes. We have reactors in Virginia that were hit by earthquakes that exceeded design specification. We have a reactor in Wisconsin, Kewaunee, which is going to shut this year for economic reasons. We've just had a report, and we'll have someone, Deb Katz, is going to talk to us after the half hour about Vermont Yankee, a major financial report showing that it does not pay to operate that reactor or the Fitzpatrick reactor. In other words, we have an industry on the brink of total collapse, and we can only pray that this industry shuts down before it melts down again, and just before we lose track of it, the Fukushima situation, which is going on 2 years now, from March 11, 2011, we still have a fuel pool 100 feet in the air, filled with the most radioactive substances ever created. They could, God forbid, an earthquake come crashing to the ground and spew out an apocalyptic cloud of radioactive lethal poison. So we got a whole panorama in front of us. But number one, I think, at this point in time on the shutdown list are the two reactors at San Onofre, California, units 2 and 3. They're between Los Angeles and San Diego. If you drive Route 5 down from L.A. to San Diego, you will see them about halfway down, right on the freeway and right on a cliff overlooking the ocean. I mean, if this cliff collapsed, these two reactors would just tip over and fall onto the beach and into the waves. It's utterly insane. They are both within a couple of miles of major earthquake faults, capable of delivering seismic shocks that would turn them to rubble, and also, of course, creating a tsunami like the one that hit it at Fukushima. So with this pretty picture, we have a rising movement to keep these reactors shut. And Russell Hoffman, if you would, explain to us, please, what has caused these two reactors to be shut now? What are the technical realities, and what are we looking at in terms of keeping them shut?
Well, the only thing that sets them apart from all the other reactors in the world is that their steam generators broke when they replaced the old ones with new ones. The new ones started rattling and fell apart.
That's a wonderful story. How much did the two major owners of these reactors are Southern California Edison, which dominates the electric market in L.A., and San Diego Gas and Electric. What prompted these geniuses to want to put in new steam generators?
The old ones were falling apart, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Small problem.
It was an industry-wide problem. The steam generators were inside each steam generator is 10,000 or so tubes, somewhere between 3,000 and 10,000 tubes, and there's somewhere between 2 and 4 steam generators in every one of the 60 or 70 pressurized water reactors in the country. The rest of the reactors in the country look pretty much like the Fukushima-type reactors.
Well, that's encouraging. So we get to choose between, you know, Fukushima and steam generators that don't work.
Well, a steam generator failure can cause an accident at least as bad as Fukushima. So it's not really much of a choice.
Well, what was happening with the steam generators at San Onofre that caused them, that led them to fail and to
well, the owners had to replace the old ones, which were made with an alloy called Alloy 600. And when they, industry-wide, when they went to the new alloy and called Alloy 690, everything went fine for everybody else. But at San Onofre, I guess they just had too many tubes inside of their steam generator. And when they changed alloys, the new alloy didn't let as much heat through as the old alloy did. It's 10% less efficient at letting the heat through. But it had a lot of other advantages, like it's more ductile, and it rattles better, actually. But it doesn't rattle as well as what happened at San Onofre. So because of this need for an extra 10% transfer of heat in these steam generators, they tried to pack in hundreds of additional tubes in the same area because, of course, they got to fit the new steam generator in where the old one went because there's all pipes everywhere that are connected to it, right?
Right.
So when they connected, when they added in all these new tubes, they also lengthened them and they packed them in closer together. And after doing all of those things, they got so much steam and so little water in the system, because the whole idea is to convert it from water to steam. And it worked so well that the tubes had so little water that they didn't have anything to dampen them when they would start to vibrate. And they started to vibrate in unison and go back and forth, bang into each other, until one of them sprung a leak, January 31, 2012.
So this vibration, did anybody record it and try to turn it into ambient music or what?
Yeah, sorry. It would sound sort of like the whales or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the way I was wailing here. So, yeah. But the bottom line here is, here's an industry that's 50 years old, right? I mean, it's been around for half a century. These are huge corporations, allegedly capable of hiring the world's best engineers. Mitsubishi comes in, which has been in the business for a half century. He's one of the biggest producers of heavy equipment in the history of the world. Their commission to install new steam generators at a cost of what, $300-400 million each?
Yeah.
And they don't work. Not only don't they work, but they jeopardize the entire population of Southern California. How many people are within how many miles of that plant?
Yeah, 8.5 million people within 50 miles of the plant. And
denser population than Fukushima.
Oh, much more people.
Unbelievable. It's truly astounding. And so what is the situation now? Are these are the steam generators, separate with units 2 and 3, I want to know the separate stories. What is the situation now with the possibilities, technical possibilities, of allowing these two reactors to reopen?
Well, when Unit 3 sprung a leak and they had to shut it down, Unit 2 had already been shut down because they were replacing the reactor pressure vessel head. In other words, other major parts had started to deteriorate, which is not surprising. And there's actually a question of whether or not that new head has been put on properly on Unit 2 and whether or not it's going to spring a leak under the pressure testing and so forth. But that's a whole separate issue, but it's a typical kind of issue. You wonder what else is going on around the country. It's always going to be things like that. So, now we have two reactors that are not operating.
Unit 2 already had a problem with the reactor pressure head, which is, of course, right at the core of the reactor. And if you have a leak from the reactor pressure head, the whole thing can blow.
Right. So they had replaced that, and they had also replaced the steam generators. And when Unit 3 sprung a leak, they went and looked more thoroughly because they said they had looked at Unit 2 somewhat. But they looked more thoroughly and realized that Unit 2 was pretty well banged up as well.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So, my understanding, and I put this in the article today, so I hope it's right, is that unofficially, the utilities have pretty much written off Unit 3, but they're still hoping to reopen Unit 2. Is that correct?
Yeah, I didn't see anything wrong in your article today, RV, except my name, of course, but other than that.
Well, you like Ace instead of Russell, so we'll remember that.
Okay.
I remember the great Ernest Kallenbach hated being called Ernie. It was either Chick or Ernest. So if you want to be Ace, given the work you've done, we will grant you that.
Okay.
All right. So technically then, both these reactors are seriously compromised. Can you tell us about the letter that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has written to the utilities about these two reactors?
Yeah. Now, this is the most captured utility regulated agency in the country as far as many people are concerned. But on December 26th, the day after Christmas, they sent Pete Dietrich, the chief nuclear officer of San Onofre, of Southern California Edison, the operators of San Onofre, a letter detailing, I think it was 32 different, and each one appeared to be pretty substantial, issues that they feel that San Onofre has not resolved yet and that they want to see resolved before they consider granting a license to restart. And one of these issues is particularly interesting. Maybe all of them are, but one of them is San Onofre wanted to restart at 70% power. And they did say to me in conversation at one of their open houses that they believe they could run at 100% power. But the Nuclear Regulatory Commission wants them to prove that they can run at 100% power safely for their entire operating period, you know, from one refueling to the next, not just 70% of 5 months, but they have to prove that they really have an operating reactor, and they can't. So, I can't see how they're going to prove that.
So what they're saying is, let us run at 70%, and we'll see what happens.
let us run 70% for just 5 months. Yeah, normal operation would be about 22 months.
Oh, for God's sake.
Without taking a look at it, and they want to run for just five. That shows, you know, the math wasn't there to go beyond five, was the way they felt, as long as they were using conservative numbers. But the NRC said, no, you know, you proved it, it would run at 100.
Well, good for the NRC, for God's sakes, but let's hope to God they don't try and run it at 100%. Then we're really in big trouble.
Well, the interesting thing there, and I think this may be the root cause of the NRC's, and it's not really so much that they've got a spine, as that there's a blatant problem with what Southern California Edison has been asking for, which is that the difference between 70% and 100% is purely administrative. In other words, all the operator has to do is turn the dial up past 70%, and they can operate at a higher percentage. And so how in the world could the NRC not demand that it be proven that it can run at 100% when that's all that has to happen for it to be running at 100%?
Unbelievable. We're talking with Ace Hoffman here about the two reactors, units 2 and 3 at San Onofre, California, the technical Keystone COPS routine that's being put on by the nuclear industry there. We have Gene Coyle and Barbara George on the line. Barbara, can you tell us here about the economic aspects, and then we'll talk to Gene about you know, switching over to solar and renewables. What is going on here in terms of the money side? ACE has laid out a pretty staggering technical reality here, but what's going on with the money at San Onofre?
Well, I'll tell you, Harvey, the money is not totally clear. They've managed to get the ratepayers to pay for the continued operation of the plant throughout the year that it was not operating. And that's obviously there are waste issues that, you know, are going to have to be paid for from now until 100,000, 200,000 years from now. Who knows who's going to pay for those things. But right now, the ratepayers in Southern California Edison and San Diego Gas and Electric Territory have been paying for a plant that is not operating, and that's about $60 million a month that we believe should not be, you know, charged to the ratepayers. So that's part of the problem, and then there's the replacement power. And that's a very interesting issue that I've delved into quite in depth, because as a ratepayer advocate at the California Public Utilities Commission, we have primarily worked on the replacement resources for the San Onofre and other and gas plants, frankly. So that's really the area that we're concentrating in. And it's not clear yet, and it won't be clear for some time, exactly how much the replacement resources have been costing. We've got about $350 million, it looks like, that has been charged to ratepayers in addition to the money that's been collected for the non-operating plant. So what Women's Energy Matters, my organization, is arguing in the California Public Utilities Commission proceedings, both on San Onofre and in the procurement proceeding, which covers the whole state, is that we need to learn how to use, quote, preferred resources, which includes energy efficiency, number one, and demand response, renewable energy, including local solar energy. And Women's Energy Matters has identified some strange things that the utilities and the grid operator are doing on the, you know, on that side. Essentially, they have been unable to actually consider those available for the grid. And so they basically, we don't know how to use them because we don't know where they are. And so that's, you know, we're saying, well, this is ridiculous because financially your energy efficiency is the cheapest resource. And so not knowing where it is ridiculous because they absolutely know where they have installed energy efficiency equipment. And this is $1 billion a year and more that California has been spending on energy efficiency. And they study very carefully what that does, except they miss one really important thing, which is where is it? So that is one of the things we are succeeding, finally, in getting the commission to recognize that they need to know where these resources are in order to use them in any particular area. And so we do have a couple of decisions in the proceeding of the procurement, the statewide proceeding, that is saying they have to start tracking energy efficiency and demand response in your solar rooftops so that they can utilize it in procurement. This would be the first thing. I mean, people don't even realize that they're not being counted, that currently that does not count as what's called local capacity.
All right, but Barbara, tell us, if we, as we do, we really do, want the California Public Utilities Commission to make a decision that will prevent San Onofre, either Unit 2 or Unit 3, from reopening and from sticking the ratepayer with all the costs that they've run up on these ridiculous failed fixes for the steam generators. What has to happen here? What has to happen at the California Public Utilities Commission to guarantee that these two reactors don't reopen?
They need to cut off the funds.
And what does that entail?
Well, essentially, as I said, they've been collecting some $60 million a month for a plant that's not operating, and that's why they opened the investigation finally, as they recognized that some of that money, you know, really should not be charged to ratepayers because, hey, you know, we're paying for something that doesn't exist. So they're going to have to sort out, though, all these other issues like the waste, the endless costs of the waste, because they'll have to continue to pay for those somehow. But the operations of the reactor are on the table for, you know, for cutting. And that is one of the big fights that's coming up in this investigation is what are utilities going to have their shareholders pay for and what amounts are the ratepayers going to pay for in the past, and then going forward, how much of this is going to be charged to ratepayers. But we're making a really big point of getting off of the gas resources, because even though gas is incredibly cheap these days, and that's because of fracking, which is, of course, a huge issue in the New York area.
It's an issue everywhere.
It's really coming out here soon, and it hasn't been as big of an issue on the West Coast as it has been in back east. But oh boy, it's going to be there very soon. But the interesting thing is that energy efficiency is still cheaper than gas, and solar has come down so much that it's not, you know, competitive with gas. But when you consider that you don't need the transmission distribution, or at least the large transmission wires for solar, then you're going to save some money there. So what we're advocating is for the commission to order the replacement resources to include a large amount of energy efficiency and demand response, which would offset the cost of solar, and then that they would also be installing solar on the rooftops in the particular areas where they need it. Because the way the grid works, you need power saved in particular areas in order to avoid needing more generation or more transmission resources. So those are the issues that we have managed to succeed in getting into the procurement decision, which is coming up for a vote next month. And so the proposed decision is looking good on this area. And what we need to do is to keep the heat on to use clean resources, because everybody in the country knows how dirty the air is in Los Angeles, so we don't need more gas resources. And this is the standard in our Nuclear Regulatory Commission and attitude, is that you have to use just one single resource. So the only choices are coal or gas plants because they operate 24 hours a day. And we're saying that's ridiculous.
Okay. A basket of gene toy. Thank you, Barbara George. And you, Barbara, your organization identity is?
It's called Women's Energy Matters, and we're at womensenergymatters.org on the web.
All right, and we've got Ace Hoffman still with us.
Yep.
Gene Coyle, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, so we're looking now at a California Public Utilities Commission that could actually make a decision that will guarantee that the two reactors at San Onofre don't reopen. And you've done a tremendous amount of economic research on these nuclear plants in California and the green alternatives. What is your take on what's happening now with the money side at San Onofre?
Well, there is a commission proceeding going on right now, and in fact, the parties are filing documents. I'm getting them on my email as we are on this phone call. It's a very wide-ranging agenda they've laid out, and yesterday, Friends of the Earth, for one, said, wait, let's take a look at the long-term viability of these San Onofre plants before we go into all the other parts about whether we should give them money for this or that. The seismic, there's a seismic study underway, you know, $35 or $40 million. So this is going to play out in a real battle. They've agenda has been laid out for the thing to go on for 2 years in this hearing without deciding whether the plant should be shut down or not. And that brings to the political side of the thing, which I think we ought to talk about.
Okay, let's do that. Now, we're going to take a break in a couple minutes. Gene Coyle, what is your organizational affiliation?
I have my own consulting practice. It's Eugene B. Coyle and Associates in Berkeley, California.
Okay. And you've been on this for decades. Tell us now, let's talk about the politics. We may take a break in a couple of minutes. We'll come back. When we do, we'll be joined also by Deb Katz from Vermont to fill us in on what's going on in Vermont Yankee. But go ahead, please. Gene Coyle.
Yeah, the California Commission, Public Utilities Commission, has laid out this very thorough list of issues to take up. But one of the key issues now, as the Friends of the Earth yesterday points out, let's start with whether San Onofre is going to reopen or not, and let's have that decided by the end of this year.
By the end of 2013,
yes. And the thing at the Public Utilities Commission, there's some really good staff work going on there. They've planned this investigation and addressed the important issues to be answered. But the politics of the commission, the commission is dominated by its president, Michael Peavy, who's got a history of pro-nuclear support. He ran the campaign to have California keep building nuclear plants all up and down the Central Valley back in the 1970s, the first time Jerry Brown was governor. They were on different sides at that point, and Peavy was a very pro-nuclear and effective organizer. But now Peavy has dominated that commission, intimidated what you might say the staff and to some extent the other commissioners, and he is a real problem about shutting San Onofre, and the way to deal with that problem is to deal with it at the governor's office, who is Jerry Brown has been supporting PV and continues to support him, so that the political side of the thing I think has to focus on the governor's office.
Why is Jerry Brown supporting a pro-nuclear chairman of the California Public Utilities Commission?
Well, there are a lot of rumors about that. But one thing that PV is doing is Jerry Brown is quite pro-solar, and PV has been accommodating that as long as the utilities can make make some money on it. And so there's this relationship where they're both on the same side, and Jerry Brown perhaps has lost his enthusiasm for shutting down nuclear plants.
All right, we're talking with three great experts here in California on the San Onofre nuclear plant and the, keeping these two reactors shut, which will be a big deal. We're going to take a break shortly. There's Eugene Coyle, Barbara George, Ace Hoffman. We're going to be joined by Deb Katz from Vermont to talk about a new study that's come out showing that the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant is quite uneconomical. We're going to go to Dana Lyons singing the solar, his version of the Solartopia song. We'll be back in a couple of moments to continue this really important discussion.
Pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia. It's time to get a better plan.
All right, all right, all right. That's the great Dana Lyons of Cows with Guns fame, singing his version, the Rocky Top version of Solartopia. We've been having a devastating show here about nuclear power, especially the two reactors at San Onofre, which are on the brink, we hope, of being forced to stay shut forever. They've been shut since January 31st of 2011. I'm sorry, 2012. It's now the new Mayan calendar, 2013, the end of the world as we know it, and we are hoping that that includes a permanent shutdown of all the reactors in the world, the 104 in the United States, and the two here on the California coast. I am in Los Angeles visiting my new grandson, here in California we have two reactors between L.A. and San Diego. They're called San Onofre, and they have been shut for almost a year, and we do not want them to reopen. We've been talking with Ace Hoffman, giving us a lot of technical expertise, Barbara George, some of the utility regulation issues, and Gene Coyle, some of the economics and politics of the situation here in California. I want to jump real quick now to Vermont, to one of the great activists of our anti-nuclear movement, Deb Katz. Deb, are you with us?
I'm with you, Harvey.
All right, I'm with you.
Yes.
So, Deb, you have been fighting Vermont Yankees since before the dawn of time, and we have an amazing
before the Mayan calendar.
Before the Mayan calendar, right? And we have an amazing development here, a major financial report on Vermont Yankee and the Entergy, the owner of Vermont Yankee. Can you tell us about it, please?
Well, there have been a number of things that have come through, but the latest was from UBS, a Swiss corporation that basically evaluates energy stock, and looked at Vermont Yankee and actually at the Fitzpatrick reactor, both of them, you know, owned by Entergy, a really great corporation, and
yeah,
said
right.
that
both of these reactors were
bringing down the stock price for Entergy's shareholders, basically, because they were not pulling a profit, either of them, and that there was a question about whether Entergy was going to shut them down. There were a lot of issues they raised in terms of it. There was a question of whether they would stay open because of the factional fight that was going on, an endless fight with the state of Vermont at this point, also because of potentially the ISO needing them, the system operator. But in fact, the ISO about a month ago came out and said that they were in fact letting Entergy out of the bidding for 2013, 14, and I think 15. Which means that they're not needed, that there's an overabundance of energy that is in the pipeline already. This just adds to many struggles that Entergy is having. I mean, the state in 2010 through the Senate voted to shutter Vermont Yankee and not allow it to continue to operate once its license expired in March of 2012. Entergy went to court won in the district court the ability to continue to operate, but was sent back basically to a judicial arm of the Vermont government, which is the Public Service Board, which has the ability to issue licenses to operate in the state. And they're in that hearing now, and we believe the Public Service Board is going to turn them down. But in the meantime, they're going through appellate court, and that hearing is on Monday in New York. And we believe that they will lose in appellate court. And
who will lose? Entergy?
Entergy will lose, yes. We believe that the Public Service Board will turn them down. We believe the appellate court will not be happy with them. And every time the state requires Entergy to do something that it's agreed to do, it takes them to court again. So they lost a case in district court on the issue of having to pay more, basically more taxes to operate in the state, and they went to court again. They endlessly go to court.
Well, it's all those great billable hours. So when do you think...
Well, it's a kind of dogged attitude that doesn't help them. I mean, if they wanted to continue to operate in the state, you would think they would attempt to develop a user-friendly attitude with the state. In fact, they've acted like a really surly second-rate bulldog.
Well, the real question is, if in fact they do lose in the courts and in the public boards in Vermont, when does Vermont Yankee shut down?
Well, I think the issues in this are going to really be economic. That's why the ISO letting them out of bidding, that's why the UBS coming out and saying that basically Vermont Yankee was a lost leader for them is very important. The taxes that have been raised on them, in fact, UBS raised as an issue in terms of this. And in this legislative session, we are going to, in fact, ask that Entergy have to provide surety for a green fielding fund for cleaning up the waste on site, which they agreed to in the original contract they signed with the state. They also are having trouble in terms of their thermal pollution and are operating at this point on a temporary permit, which we believe will also be pulled, which will mean that they can no longer dump hundreds of millions of gallons of hot water into the Connecticut River each day, which will cost them another pretty penny. And the issue is... at some point, it's going to get too expensive to continue this very shabby farce.
And what point do you think that'll be?
I think it will be potentially before they have to replace the condenser. They are running on the oldest condenser in the country at this point. They got the NRC to say they could go, I think, to 2016, and I think that's a kind of outlier in this. I really believe that we could see them close in the next year or two. Part of it is going to be their own stockholders who are just going to say, enough, it's time to cut bait. The part of the struggle is that Entergy is operating in a larger arena. Of course, they're being sued by every state, you know, that they're operating in the Northeast at this point because they do such a creditable job. So they're being sued in Massachusetts, but also in New York. And New York is a very big issue because that's Indian Point 2 and 3 and Fitzpatrick. And their main concern is probably for Indian Point 2 and 3 at this point.
Well, what are the economics now at Indian Point? These are the two reactors.
I think they're still making money there, although Cuomo is committed to their closure. And Cuomo is pursuing, in some ways, similar avenues that the state of Vermont did, one of the things we decided after 9/11 was that there was really no satisfaction possible from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, that there was nothing that a nuclear corporation could do that would get the NRC to close them anymore. And we began to pursue a states' rights issue in different states. And Cuomo is taking them on in terms of water quality. So they're pursuing issues with the NRC, but the whole one of the questions for them is they're dumping hot water into the Hudson River and the effects on the aquatic life, which are the purview of the state.
And so the state could pull their water permits and force reactors.
The state is saying that for them to operate, they are going to have to put in a very expensive system to cool their water before it goes into the river. We believe in Vermont that the Agency of Natural Resources will eventually say that they cannot run without using their cooling towers all the time.
Well,
that will be very expensive. We've heard it could be up to $1 million a day to have to do that.
Amazing. So essentially then, of course, it's not just the two reactors here at San Onofre in California that are on the brink. Vermont Yankee has been fought for decades now by people like Deb Katz and the great anti-nuclear movement there in New England. And, you know, we also have Fitzpatrick in New York under the gun.
Yes.
Oyster Creek. Does Entergy own Oyster Creek?
No, that's Exelon, another great corporation.
Yeah.
Set it out
well,
of Illinois.
Why is it, by the way, that all these corporations that own nuclear power plants have names that sound like laxatives? Does that have something to do with the race problem? What do you think?
Well, you know, when it wanted to spin off a number of its really second-rate reactors that it bought for a song through deregulation, when it first presented it to the state of Vermont, it actually said the corporation was named SpinCo. And it wondered why the state of Vermont didn't just, you know, jump for joy at that idea.
That's exciting. All right, we're talking with Deb Katz here, lifetime activist, anti-nuclear leader in Vermont and western Massachusetts. We also, by the way, have the Pilgrim reactor in Massachusetts on the brink. Tell us quickly about that
one,
and then we'll go back.
Well, Pilgrim, I mean, they're doing a lot of great work over that. Some of that is involved with water quality. They're in an NRC proceeding over relicensing. The state of Massachusetts is involved in that. Basically, the state is not against nuclear power. Deval Patrick has not come out against it, but he is very concerned about the high-level waste at Pilgrim. The Pilgrim reactor and Vermont Yankee are Mark I reactors. They're basically sister reactors to the Fukushima units, and the vulnerability of the fuel pool at these reactors is, of course, well known.
All right,
Patrick wants the fuel moved into dry cask storage, and of course, Entergy in their really their accommodating fashion, of course, is refusing to do any of it because they don't want to spend any money. So the state is in a fight with them through the licensing, the relicensing of the Pilgrim reactor.
Wow. H. Hoffman here in California. Does any of this sound familiar to you with the fight over San Onofre? Do you see any parallels between Vermont Yankee here and San Onofre?
Yes, quite a few, including the blindness of the governor in that case to see that if he moves all the waste into dry casks, he's still going to have spent fuel pools unless he shuts the reactors down. But that's the only way to really reduce the risk, if they close the reactors.
Right. And the technical side, Deb Katz, is Vermont Yankee operating right now? Is it critical?
Vermont Yankee is operating illegally. The Public Service Board of Vermont has said that they are operating illegally. Entergy is very unhappy with that. But part of the contract that they signed when they bought the nuke in 2002 is that they would not produce any nuclear waste without, you know, after they're supposed to close, without getting a new license to operate from the state, which they do not have.
So they're the state of Vermont says that the Vermont Yankee plant is operating illegally?
Yes.
Well, why doesn't the governor send out the National Guard?
Because Entergy basically has an injunction from the from the federal court to allow them to continue to operate until the case is resolved.
All right. Barbara George,
now, the New England Coalition actually has gone to the state Supreme Court and said that Entergy is in violation of the contract that they signed, separate from what the Public Service Board is doing or what's in the appellate court, and that the state Supreme Court should, in fact, force Entergy to close down. And that hearing is going to be next Wednesday. So Entergy's lawyers have a lot of places to go next week.
Well, of course, they're all billing the ratepayers as best they possibly can.
No, they can't. It's not a utility. They can't bill anyone but themselves.
Well, we like that.
Yes, we do.
All right.
If anyone
George,
should pay for their lawsuits, it's them. Of
Barbara
course,
George,
one thing they said, when the state lost part of the case in district court was that the state should have to pay $4 million for their, for their
well,
loss.
Well, you were asking about the parallels, and I wasn't able to catch the entire conversation because we have a lot going on here today. I'm actually quite concerned that Edison, which is seriously on the ropes financially, may choose to sell some of their assets, and perhaps they would find a willing buyer in some of these bottom feeders like Energy and Exelon. Energy in particular, they were actually negotiating with a couple of years ago to buy San Onofre. And it's interesting that there are some ways that Vermont and New England folks have been going after these non-utility independent generators, that gives me some hope, because I actually was quite concerned that if Edison was able to sell the reactors or give them away or pay somebody to take them, that the state of California would have less jurisdiction. Because what we do have now as a recourse is that we're able to, or the commission, the California Public Utilities Commission, is able to control the amount of money that Edison can collect from ratepayers for whatever it is they do. So that is one lever that the state has. This is as opposed to what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is responsible for, which is a lot. In the nuclear arena, there is a federal preemption on a lot of things, which they ran into trouble with in Vermont. That's why that thing is still running, Vermont Yankee, when the state wanted to close it down. But the other thing that we have jurisdiction over as a state is the electricity reliability issues. Whether a power plant or a facility is needed, that is up to the California Public Utilities Commission.
Right.
And what we're pushing for is for the commission to say, no, we don't need this plant, and therefore we would not allow rate recovery for the amounts that it would take to restart the plant, keep it running through its relicensing and beyond. So those are the issues that I'm hoping to see addressed, because as I said, I mean, Edison is having some major difficulties. Their power plant owning subsidiary, which owns a lot of other things but does not own the nuke, with the utility owns the nuke, then there's this thing called a parent company, which they formed during deregulation, so they've got an independent branch.
Right. Barbara, let me jump in here real quick, because one of the things you're concerned about and mentioned here, which is important, is the idea that the company could sell the reactors to somebody else. But we have actually seen at the Kewaunee reactor,
yes,
in Wisconsin, which was, you know, reasonably, I mean, by their standards, running reasonably well, had no buyers. And you know, this is an old, completely amortized, you know, junk heap reactor that should have been profitable by all standards, and yet nobody would buy it, and that's why they're shutting it. Nobody's going to buy. Gene Coyle, do you think there's anybody on earth that would want to buy San Onofre?
I can't imagine that there is. Let me go back to a couple other things, though, that Edison and San Diego Gas Electric are proposing a protective order to govern access to certain information in this proceeding that the Public Utility Commission is going on, so that they want to keep the public from finding out what's happening. And in opposition to that protective order, today the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, under their attorney John Geisman, who used to be the on the California Energy Commission. Let me just read this a little bit.
Okay, but Gene, you got to be quick. We're almost out of time here. So can you just
it'll be quick.
Summary.
They severely flawed design assumptions for which Edison and San Diego could be legally culpable as the primary cause of damage to units 2 and 3 steam generators. Here's the interesting piece. The presence of former Edison executives in key energy positions throughout California state government has for years triggered allegations of favored treatment. And the very genesis of this investigation stems from the spectacle of lapsed governmental oversight, despite the combined jurisdictional authority of the CPUC and the NRC. A regulatory blind spot failed to prevent $671 million of new equipment from transforming into what may be useless junk. So, what
we like that useless junk. That's
yeah.
good.
So what? Well,
although it's actually
really
a compliment. It's way. If it was just useless junk, these reactors wouldn't be anywhere near the problem they actually are, being radioactive junk.
It's lethal junk.
Yeah. Lethal junk. Yeah, exactly. There isn't any more lethal junk. So what you're saying, Gene, and we got to wrap up here pretty quick, is that, well, tell us exactly what you said here. Give us a paraphrase.
Well, I think this is really a political problem, not one of... the question is, can we get a good decision out of the California Public Utilities Commission without...
Well, listen... We got to get a good decision out of the California Public Utilities Commission or the Nuclear Regulatory Commission or the courts in Vermont. But the bottom line here, and thank you so much, Ace Hoffman, Barbara George, Gene Coyle, Deb Katz. We're presiding here at the funeral, we hope, and the sooner the better, of the nuclear power industry.
And we're the pallbearers.
We're the pallbearers. You better believe it. Thank you so much, everybody. We're going to be shutting Santa Rosa, Vermont, Inc., and a whole lot of other nuclear plants in the era of the new Mayan calendar. Next week, another great show at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you so much, Matt, and the crew at the studio there. And we'll talk to you next week from an increasingly non-nuclear Solartopian world.
Will we multiply? We needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high.